You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, many people are coping with the pandemic by learning to play a musical instrument. We'll find out why and what they're playing, and we want to hear how it's going for you. Now, state Republicans are trying to repeal Governor Evers' latest COVID-19 emergency order. That's the one that calls for a statewide mask mandate. The Senate passed a resolution 18-13 on Tuesday, sending it to the Assembly, which was planning to vote on it this morning. But the effort hit a snag. Yesterday, the legislature's nonpartisan budget office said that repealing Evers' order would mean Wisconsin would lose a bunch of federal food assistance aid. That money's only available to states with COVID-19 emergency declarations in place. So what now? You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you want to see happen? Do you support Republican lawmakers in their move to end the statewide mask mandate? Do you want it to stay in place? Do you not like the governor's use of the power, but want a mask mandate passed by the legislature? There's a lot of permutations here. What do you think? 800-642-1234 is the number to call. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas at WPR.org. Sean Johnson is Wisconsin Public Radio State Capitol Bureau Chief. Hey, Sean.
Hey, Rob.
And Laurel White is WPR State Capitol Reporter. Laurel, thanks for joining us as well.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, Rob.
Yeah, we needed both of you to sort this one out. Sean, let's start with you. I woke up this morning. This is a simple story. Either the mask mandate was going to get overridden or it wasn't. What happened today that derailed that?
Yeah, it got a lot more complicated today. And that's because of this federal money that is attached to the emergency declaration. This memo came out from the Legislative Fiscal Bureau yesterday at the request of Representative Evan Goyke, a Democrat. Wanted to know about this food assistance funding that Wisconsin gets. And it's about $50 million of federal funding a month that flows to Wisconsin through federal COVID funding that is only given to states that have emergency declarations, like the emergency declarations Wisconsin has had for the mask mandate. And so on the day that Assembly Republicans were tentatively scheduled to vote on repealing the mandate, this news came out that move would cost the state $50 million a month.
All right, we'll sort out how they're trying to get around that in a minute. Laurel, I want you to take us back a little bit to the legislature's effort to override the mask mandate. This is something, correct me if I'm wrong, they can do this and this is the thing the governor can't veto. How does this work?
So this is something that's written into state laws related to emergency declarations. So something we haven't had a ton of experience with until the COVID-19 pandemic. And basically what state law allows is for the legislature with just a simple majority vote in each chamber to override any emergency declaration issued by the governor. So if they don't agree with the governor saying X, Y, or Z is a public health emergency in the state or an emergency in the state, they can undo it. They haven't done it up until this point, but they're obviously kind of taking those steps now.
And Laurel, again, before we go back and sort out what happens next, what has been the response from health and other groups to this effort to effectively end the mask mandate?
There's been a really overwhelming negative response. So I think my last count was 21 different healthcare groups had registered their official opposition to this resolution. And that's something I should have mentioned before. It's a joint resolution, like you said, not a bill, so the governor can't veto it. And they say that it's really going to be detrimental to public health in the state if this is allowed to happen, because we would essentially be left with a real patchwork of health orders across Wisconsin related to masks instead of the statewide mandate.
And Sean, speaking of patchwork, that's kind of where we are now, it looks like, with legislation. How are Republican lawmakers trying to still override the mask mandate but keep something that looks like an emergency declaration in the works?
So we found out today what their plan A is, and we don't know for sure that they're going to follow through on this because it's only passed the Senate so far. But here's what they did. They added an amendment to this really broad COVID-19 bill that just a couple weeks ago had been a bipartisan compromise between the governor and Senate Republicans. And what this amendment does is it says you know, essentially to oversimplify it, is that the state of Wisconsin can declare an emergency just for the purpose of receiving federal funds. So it would, you know, essentially let the governor declare an emergency that does nothing but have federal money flow to the state. It passed the Senate, and that is now part of this COVID-19 bill, which got, you know, even more messier politically. And now it's in the assembly's hands. The assembly speaker said today he thinks it will work, but he wants to do their due diligence and check on it to make sure that it will work. Because, you know, the federal government can also see what the state is doing here, passing an amendment that says we're in an emergency when really that emergency carries no powers.
We are talking to our own Laurel White and Sean Johnson, our Capitol Bureau team, looking at efforts to overturn the state's mask mandate in the state legislature. Ran into a snag when it turned out ending the emergency order that caused it would jeopardize a whole bunch of food aid coming from federal support. Let's go to your calls now at 800-642-1234. Tom is with us in Madison. Tom, hi.
Hi. I guess what I'm looking for is a good, clear explanation of what it is that conservatives feel is making it necessary to repeal this mandate, and find out, you know, see if we can find out exactly why, first of all, why they want to repeal it, and second of all, why is it they don't feel that something like this is necessary to lower the risk of the pandemic to the citizens of the state?
Tom, thanks a lot for that call. Laurel, what have you heard from people sponsoring and supporting this legislation, the arguments for why they want to override this emergency order creating the mask mandate?
So what we've heard from supporters of this resolution that would overturn the emergency declaration and therefore the mask mandate is that it's not really about masks, that it's about the governor's powers and their belief that he has overstepped his bounds, basically, in issuing these repeated COVID-19 emergency declarations. So as of right now, the governor has issued 5 different emergency declarations in Wisconsin since last March, all related to the pandemic. And they say that he shouldn't be able to issue those repeated declarations without some sort of buy-in from the state legislature. Those declarations end after 60 days under state law. He's kind of re-upping them every time without consultation from the legislature. And they say that that's something just from a balance of power perspective shouldn't be allowed to happen.
And Sean, has there been any talk from Republicans in the legislature about passing their own statewide mask mandate to replace it, you know, to have the same outcome, but without their concerns about the balance of power?
You know, Speaker Voss seemed to indicate today that he didn't think that was necessary. So, I mean, he controls the assembly, and if he's not willing to do it, that's kind of that. You did hear in debate earlier this week, Senator Steve Noss, you know, one of the more outspoken conservatives in the entire legislature, kind of challenged the governor, say, hey, propose something to us. You haven't done that yet. But, you know, when it comes to this, there is that separation of powers issue that Republicans talk a lot about, and they feel like the legislature needs to be consulted on this. But there's also the matter of there are a number of Republican lawmakers who, you know, they just don't prioritize wearing masks. I mean, you just watch the debate to see that. You know, there are several lawmakers during debate choose not to wear masks. They're 100% Republican. There are Democrats who, you know, attend these floor sessions in the Senate anyway, who do wear masks. There are others who attend virtually. So that's kind of where the parties are at right now.
Let's bring on another caller. Judy is with us in Menasha. Judy, hi. Are you there, Judy? I guess not. Let's go to Pat then in Bayside. Pat, hello.
Hello. Thank you for having me on. I just want to say that the Republicans I know that have good common sense and the Democrats all want these masks. And the only people that don't are the Trump people and our legislature who fights poor Governor Evers every chance they get. And we are watching and we are paying attention. What is he doing to our health in this state when they try fighting him? Even Tommy Thompson is siding with this governor and trying to help him, which is more than our own legislature has ever done.
Pat. Thanks a lot for the call. I think I'd seen that former Governor Thompson, now UW system president, didn't really answer one way or the other on the mask mandate itself. I did want to ask, she mentioned that she had heard some Republicans supporting it. Laurel, I gather a couple Republicans in the state Senate ultimately voted to not overturn the mandate. What did we hear from them?
Right. So that was Senator Robert Coles and Senator Dale Coinga. You know, that was certainly not a clear bipartisan vote in the Senate that we saw on Tuesday. So there is some pushback about, you know, the value of masks and kind of the role of state government in making sure that those are worn, kind of issuing that requirement. I think it's interesting to mention, you know, Speaker Voss just did an event with Wisp Politics where he talked about his personal support for mask wearing, but his kind of philosophical belief that it's not government's role to mandate that. I think that that's kind of one of the fissures there that exists within the Republican Party right now.
We're talking about the push by state Republicans to strike down Governor Evers' statewide emergency order, including a mask mandate. Sean Johnson and Laurel White are with us, WPR State Capitol Bureau Chief and State Capitol Reporter, respectively. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you support the idea of striking down the state mask mandate? If so, is it because you don't want a mandate or you don't want the governor to have the power to keep issuing executive orders like this or emergency orders like this? Do you want it to stay? Do you want to see local ones in the absence of a state one? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. Central Time, I'm Rob Ferret. Sean Johnson and Laurel White are with me. We are talking about the fight over the statewide mask mandate. Republicans in the legislature trying to overturn the governor's emergency order creating that mask mandate. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Let us know what you think and what you want to see happen. Back to your calls now. Mark is with us in Altoona. Mark, hi.
Yes, I'd just like to point out that need for a mask mandate is obviously benefits all our teachers, our doctors, our nurses that are overstretched by this whole thing. And any move to remove a mask mandate when we have mutations threatening the possibility of the vaccine not working is just beyond belief. And they can't explain it other than they want to do it on a technicality.
Mark, thanks a lot for the call. Laurel, earlier you mentioned a lot of health groups raising concerns like Mark did about the impact on frontline workers. Mark also mentioned schools, and I feel like I've seen some maybe Democrats in the legislature, correct me if I'm wrong, saying, hey, getting rid of the mask mandate makes the mission of getting schools opened up again more difficult. Is that a concern that's been raised?
I think that's a really great thing to point out, Rob. I mentioned those 21 healthcare organizations that had lodged their official disapproval of overturning the mask mandate. There were also quite a few school groups that represented different organizations, teachers, administrators, that lodged their disapproval as well. Also some business groups. In total, I think we just went over the 40 mark today in terms of groups that had lodged, opposition to overturning the mask mandate. And it really is, it's a coalition of those healthcare groups, of school groups, and business groups.
And Sean, before I go back to calls, you and I talk a lot about various challenges to COVID emergency orders in courts. I assume there's still something going on the court side of things.
Yeah, there is. And you heard this referenced a lot by Republicans who want to repeal the mandate. I mean, they say that what the governor did was unlawful, illegal, and, you know, they're confident that the court is eventually going to back them up. And that may well be the case. However, it has been more than 2 months since oral arguments in one of the cases challenging the governor's emergency order that created the mask mandate. So for the court, it would appear that it's not just a slam dunk when it's been that long since they had oral arguments in this case that they, you know, that they know is sort of pressing and that they know the governor's likely going to keep issuing these emergency orders. The court has not felt compelled to rule on this thing right away. And it is worth noting that at a lower court level, Governor Tony Evers won. You know, a judge ruled that there's nothing in the law that says he can't do what he's doing.
Let's go back to our callers. Jake is with us in Madison. Jake, hello.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Everybody, call Robin Voss, call Steve Nass. I don't understand either. I think this is just political gamesmanship, and it's not about balance of power. It's been Scott Walker. They like having control of the Supreme Court. They like having the legislature. They like having the assembly. And before Evers was even in office, after he was elected, they tried to limit his power then. It's all about politics. They need to get something done and stop playing games.
Jake, thanks for the call. Jake saying this is a symptom of the battle between Republicans and Governor Walker, and he's clearly leading the blame toward the Republicans there. Sean, this is part of a rich tapestry of non-cooperation between the two parties here.
That's pretty good. I would like to use that phrase in future stories, maybe.
I grant you permission.
It pretty much goes way back to before, you know, the governor is sworn in. And I don't think it's ever really gotten a whole lot better between the governor and Republican lawmakers. And it's kind of why we thought it was noteworthy a couple weeks ago when it seemed like the governor cut a deal with Senate Republicans on this, you know, this broad COVID-19 bill, not the mask mandate, but, you know, a COVID-19 bill that did a lot of the stuff that Evers wanted, but also had some limits on COVID-19 lawsuits that Republicans wanted, passed 29-2. The Senate Majority Leader and Evers were both on board. But that was, you know, it looks like short-lived. A couple weeks later, the Senate kind of backed away from that. And here we are again.
Talking to Sean Johnson and Laurel White from the WPR State Capitol Bureau team, looking at the mask mandate, Republican lawmakers and their efforts to overturn it, hit some snags today. Hey, Laurel, before we go back to a caller, what is there a timeline now on when the assembly could tackle this revised package?
So it's a little bit up in the air because of that amendment that was added in the Senate today that has to do with the mask mandate and emergency declarations and that federal funding. The speaker did say that he wants to take some time to review that amendment. So just kind of depends on, you know, how long they decide that takes to do that review. But the speaker did say something at a WisPolitics event this afternoon about potentially some floor time next week. So we'll just have to keep an eye on it.
Let's go back to your calls now. Jan is with us in La Crosse. Jan, hi.
Hi. I thank you for taking my call. I'm a teacher here, and I have a couple of points. One, our Gunderson Clinic here in La Crosse and Mayo Health System both announced on Monday that not one case of influenza has come into either one of their clinics this year, and it's attributed all to mask wearing. So, and the United States averages about 32,000 people a year die from influenza. So not only is are the masks helping to prevent people from getting COVID and dying from COVID, it's also preventing influenza. As a teacher, we were just talking at lunch today, how many of our students don't have colds this year? Normally, in the elementary school especially, you've got hundreds of kids that have got colds. We hardly have any. You can count them on one hand. And I really agree with the previous caller who talked about the gamesmanship. This is just about the Republicans wanting to handicap Tony Evers and his power. And if they believe in science at all and medicine, and they want to save the lives of our doctors and our nurses and all of our healthcare people in the nursing homes, our elderly and teachers, they should be making this mask mandate. If they don't want Evers to have the power, then make a bill and put it through on their own.
Jan, thanks a lot for the call. Sean, you mentioned earlier, at least as of now, it doesn't look like that's in the cards for the legislature to pass their own mask mandate. A question some people might be wondering about, if the statewide mask mandate goes away, do the local ones at city or county level stick around?
They do stick around, yeah. I mean, they would still be there. But I think the concern from groups like the Wisconsin Medical Society are that, you know, once you take away that statewide mandate and that the numbers are going to get worse, that even if not everybody follows it, there is evidence that having a mandate in place increases mask wearing generally. And, you know, if suddenly it becomes a thing that just is required in some cities and not others, the thought is that that'll go down.
Thanks for that call. And Laurel, in our last couple of minutes, there's still, even if lawmakers agree on this revised COVID thing that says, yes, we can have sort of a meaningless emergency order to keep federal money coming, is there other stuff in this package that the governor is expected to maybe want to veto the whole thing anyway?
It's very possible that the governor could veto this bill. Even if the Senate and the Assembly are able to agree on what they want in it, there were some additions that the Assembly put back in. We talked earlier about a bipartisan agreement between Senate Republicans and the governor. The Assembly has added some additional things to that compromise bill, that there's speculation that has kind of, limited the possibility that the governor is going to sign this. Some of those things are a ban on employers saying that their employees have to get the COVID-19 vaccine. That's something that the governor might oppose. I think it's important to mention we haven't gotten an official comment from the governor on where he is on those additions yet. So it's very much TBD, but the possibility is certainly there more than it was before, because he said that he did support the version that passed the Senate that didn't have these additions.
We'll leave it there for now. Laurel, thanks for joining us.
Thanks so much.
And Sean, thanks for being with us.
Yeah, thank you.
We've been talking to Sean Johnson, WPR State Capitol Bureau Chief, and Laurel White, WPR State Capitol Reporter. We talked to them about the push by state Republicans to repeal Governor Evers' statewide mask mandate. Gets a little complicated. Two different bills going on here, that resolution that would end the mandate, and then that separate COVID-19 legislation affected by it. If only there was some kind of politics podcast you could listen to. Hey, wait, there is the WPR Politics Podcast with Sean and Laurel and John K. Wilson. Check it out at WPR.org. Coming up, have you learned or relearned how to play a musical instrument during the pandemic? Well, we want to hear about it. I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up today at 6 on 1A Plus, get some great advice on streaming TV shows and movies, ideas on what to watch just in time for some of the big entertainment award season coming up. That's today at 6 on 1A Plus. Now, with big events like concerts, festivals, and sports being canceled and in-person activities becoming virtual because of COVID-19, people have been looking for stuff to do. And one item that's been on the list for a lot of people, playing a musical instrument. The Milwaukee Journal Sentinel reports that music stores in the city are experiencing a boom in instrument sales, especially guitars, pianos, and digital keyboards. Many people are picking up instruments for the first time, or maybe the first time in a long time. Is this you? Tell us about your musical ventures at 800-642-1234. Have you taken up learning a musical instrument during the pandemic? Did you pull something out of the attic or the closet? And how are you learning? Virtual lessons, meeting in person, following along with online videos? What made you want to play the piano, guitar, saxophone, or whatever? What questions or advice do you have about getting started? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@WPR.org. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Erica Breitbarth is a music teacher and choir director at Ronald Reagan High School in Milwaukee. She was also a finalist for the Grammy Music Educator Award in 2017. Erica, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks so much for having me, Rob.
Well, before we get to learning how to play an instrument, I understand you've taught some virtual high school music classes. How do you pull that off?
MPS has been virtual for the whole year. So we have been running all of our music classes through Google Meet. So lots of tiny little boxes, students singing and playing instruments from home.
Seems like it's hard to sync up. Like, I'd be worried about keeping people in time with each other.
Yes. If you've ever tried singing Happy Birthday on Zoom, you know that the latency is a serious issue. So we have no way of being able to hear each other in real time, which presents a lot of challenges.
And you've also been doing some virtual coffee house performances, kind of open mics with your students. How's that been going?
Yeah, that we figured since we can't do band, choir, and orchestra in real time, that we would find some ways for our to figure out what our students are making in terms of music at home during the pandemic. And so we invited them to come and do a virtual coffee house that we stream out on YouTube every other week with students presenting original songs and covers and playing music with their families. And it's been so much fun to see the kind of music that they're playing in their free time during the pandemic, and then also the kind of music that's helping them process all the things that are going on.
And let's talk about the value of learning music, because, you know, I'm an amateur musician myself. I've played music all my life. But I think music is like art and writing and a lot of those things where once we stop being kids, we think, OK, I'm going to leave that stuff to the pros who are really good at it and they can do it. And I'm going to let it fizzle for me. Can you talk about the value of keeping up with or getting back into playing a musical instrument or singing?
Yeah. Well, playing a musical instrument or singing is just a great way to relax, to process emotions, to work on those fine motor skills, to engage your brain and your heart at the same time. And so no matter what your level of musicianship, there's always room for improvement. There's always ways to do that. And in this pandemic, we've lost so much in terms of live concerts and all these other aspects of music, but we've gained some time. We have a lot more time to be at home, to practice, to pull that instrument out of its case and try getting better at it.
We are talking about music. More people are getting into playing musical instruments during the pandemic. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Are we talking about you this last year? 800-642-1234. Erica Breitbarth is with us, music teacher and choir director at Ronald Reagan High School in Milwaukee. Let's bring on a caller now. We've got Rachel with us in Green Bay. Rachel, hi.
Hi. So I've been playing the cello. I started when I was 5, and I played until I was about 25, 26. And in the last 5 or 6 years, because of work, I wasn't really motivated. I was too exhausted. So I got out of playing with the orchestras and kind of got out of playing the cello. I now work at a long-term care facility. And with COVID, the restrictions have become really strict and are no longer able to have family or visitors or guests come in to help throughout the day. And with the Christmas party coming around the corner, they asked me to play the cello for the residents. So it was really nice and motivating. I dragged the cello out, I tuned it up, I bought some rosin, and it was a really good reason to start practicing again.
It motivated you to practice. And Rachel, what was it like after so long, you know, having a, I'm sure, appreciative audience again?
Oh, yeah. It was kind of nerve-wracking. I became really shy, and my fingers do not move as fast as they used to. But thankfully, Christmas songs, even the easiest ones, sound great. So it was a really good experience.
I love it. Rachel, thank you so much for sharing that with us. Erica, Rachel found a great motivation playing at the place she worked. I know it can be tough, though, for people to get motivated. Do you have thoughts on getting people to, you know, take that instrument back out of the closet or learn that new one, and how to get motivated to want to keep doing it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think having an end game is really helpful. So having a performance coming up, even if it's performing for your family or performing on Zoom for your friends, but having that end game can be really be motivating for practice. And then also just setting aside some time every day to practice, setting aside a consistent amount of time to just get back in the swing is really helpful. Otherwise, I mean, you start to work those muscles, get back into shape, and also just have a goal in mind. Pick out a piece that maybe you've played before, but want to get out again, and then start on some new music.
Thanks again for that call at 800-642-1234. Yeah, that I play the saxophone and I play in a band, and in normal times we perform. So I've got incentive to practice there. I play piano. I'm not that good, especially when reading music. And I'm not going to inflict a performance on anyone to give a motivation. My friends don't want to hear it. My enemies won't show up. I don't know, if we don't have that goal, that idea that we're going to perform, how do we make it worth ourselves to keep doing it?
I think when you're practicing, I always like to try to do a little bit of technique and a little bit of tunes. So, you know, picking out something new you want to do, if it's expanding your range or getting faster at playing a lick, having those little goals for how you want to get better at your instrument, but then don't spend too much time on that. Pick a new tune you want to learn or watch a great performance and get inspired. There's so many great concerts that are out there on YouTube just to watch these great performers, be inspired to practice, or even play along, find a tune that you love. and a performer that you love and play along on YouTube, or find a family member who also plays an instrument and do things together. I think that collaborative aspect is really important, even if it is just playing along with recordings.
We got a comment from Brandy on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Brandy writes, I'm looking into getting a tutor so I can get back into playing violin. However, I know how to play violin and I'm interested in learning cello, so I'm thinking about purchasing a cello and learning that. However, Brandy goes on, I took some piano in college. Got really good really fast, so maybe I should get a tutor and get better at piano. Then I get overwhelmed and don't do anything. Erica, could you help Brandy narrow it down and do something?
I say start small. Pick one. Pick one, either start on the new instrument or pick the one that you've done before and find a teacher who you gel with. A lot of times if you're looking for a new teacher, they'll do a free lesson or a reduced price lesson just to see if you click musically, and just having that person to kind of cheer you on, even if you're interacting with them virtually, is a great thing to do. If you're looking for a good teacher, I'd recommend finding someone local who might be teaching virtually, but then on the other side of virtual learning, being able to connect in person is great. So yeah, I say pick one. Focus on that and find a teacher. Some of the ways you can do that, contact a local university and ask if they have a list of teachers, or if you have kids at home, contact their music teacher. They usually have a good list of local teachers that can provide some quality instruction.
Let's go back to our callers at 800-642-1234. Margaret is with us in Rhinelander. Margaret, hi.
Hello.
What'd you want to tell us about, Margaret?
Well, I wanted to just say that I'm a senior citizen, and I've been grouped with other ukulele players, and we play up here in northern Wisconsin, but we haven't been able to play outside, and it's been very frustrating for all of us. So what we're doing is we get together for Zoom sessions probably once or twice a week, and that's really helped us stay connected with our group and keep our instruments going and our singing and everything.
Are you able to perform together on Zoom, Margaret? Because we were talking earlier, it's hard to stay in sync. Do you take turns, or do you try to do it all at once?
We have to all be muted except for the person singing or performing.
Okay.
And that person is unmuted. Otherwise, you get a lot of feedback.
Yeah. Okay, Margaret, thank you so much. I love that. So, okay. Erica, usually probably they perform as an ensemble. They're making the best of the bad situation, and they take turns on Zoom. I like that solution. What do you think?
Yeah. And I think even just seeing each other at home playing on a call is great accountability. Hey, we're meeting at 7. And even though we can't hear each other, we're together. We're making music together. There's also some great technology that allows you to record pieces remotely. So there's some great technology like Soundtrap is an awesome recording software where one person can record a line and send it to the other person. They can record parts and you can put all those parts together even if you can't be in the same place at the same time.
Thanks a lot for sharing that with us, Margaret. We're talking about the rise in people playing musical instruments during the pandemic. Erica Breitbarth is with us, music teacher and choir director at Ronald Reagan High School in Milwaukee. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you picked up a new instrument over the last year? Or did you pull out an old instrument, maybe one you hadn't played since, I don't know, high school? Are you playing after having set it down for a while? Are you taking lessons, trying to learn for yourself, maybe online? Do you have a musical goal? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll continue the conversation, maybe hear from you, coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. That's our guest, music teacher and choir director Erica Breitbarth from Ronald Reagan High School in Milwaukee, performing Lava from the Pixar musical of the same name. That was yesterday during the school's student virtual coffee house. Erica and a few of her students meet on Wednesdays to perform over Zoom to the school community. We're talking about a rise in musical instrument sales during the pandemic and how to start or restart our musical aspirations. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you picked up an old instrument over the last year and given it a try again, or tried something entirely new? How's it going? Are you performing for people? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll go right back to your calls. Heidi is with us in Appleton. Heidi, hello.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I started a new instrument this summer. I started the ukulele. I had some music experience from high school many years ago with piano and band, and so, but it'd been a while. So learning a completely new instrument, it has been really fun. Even got to do some Christmas carols with our family, put together a little in-house performance. So it's been a good time.
Sounds fantastic. Thanks for sharing that. Is ukulele, Erica, a good instrument to start with, maybe even for someone who doesn't have that musical background?
It's a great instrument to start with. I just learned how to play the ukulele over the last like 6-7 years, and it's such a great intro, especially if you want to learn how to play guitar. Ukulele is easier on your fingers. Chords are easier. It's good for people with small hands. So if you have little kids you want to learn, and you don't necessarily have to have all that music theory knowledge. You can really just sit down and within an hour or so can usually strum at least a basic tune. It's a great way to accompany yourself. Also, ukes are really portable. You can take them along with you to go and play. And it's a great entry point into learning how to play an instrument, and especially an instrument that you can accompany with your voice.
Thanks a lot for that call at 800-642-1234. We'll go to Joe next in Blue Mounds. Joe, hi.
Hello, how you doing?
Good. What's your musical story, Joe?
Well, I'm an experienced musician, so I might not fit your profile exactly, but back in March, I was inspired by the great Yasha Heifetz to play scales every day. Mr. Heifetz, when he was a young man, he was 17, and he was touring the United States, and he was this great phenom, and he had led a sheltered life. But anyway, when he got to the States, there were automobiles, and there were girls, and he kind of, his discipline kind of slipped a little bit, and by the time his tour started in San Francisco, by the time he got to New York City, a critic said, well, you know, you're not quite a 10 anymore, you're a 9.5 or something like that. And Heifetz was honest with himself and said, I need to rededicate myself. I'm going to get up every morning and play scales. And I said, if it's good enough for Yasha Heifetz, it's good enough for me. And I've been doing that pretty much every day since then.
And what are you playing scales on, Joe? What's your instrument?
I play a 5-string banjo, which is not that much different than the ukuleles you were discussing a little earlier. It's a little it's different, but...
Joe,
I've been playing for 50 years, so but I've rededicated myself.
I love it, Joe. Thanks a lot for sharing that story and that inspiration. And I love that he went to, you know, I'm reading a Dexter Gordon biography, and that's inspiring me to get a little better, not Dexter Gordon level better at my saxophone. Erica, talk about sources of inspiration like we've had.
Yeah, I love that. And I love that you chose to pick up your scales. Getting those fundamentals is so important. Even if you play just a little bit each day, that's what gets you better when you want to play songs or when you want to learn how to improvise. And finding those inspiring performers is such a great way to get started. Find someone who plays your instrument, who's an expert, and listen to their music. Get inspired by them. If you're a jazz musician and you're listening to a great solo, write that solo down and learn how to play it. Finding those musical inspirations are so important. And since we have YouTube and Spotify and all these great ways to listen to music, find those inspiring performances that get you to want to crack open your case and start practicing.
Thanks a lot for that call and that story at 800-642-1234. We're talking about our musicianship during the pandemic. A lot of news articles out there saying, hey, people are buying musical instruments or picking up their old ones, learning, relearning. You could share your own story at 800-642-1234. Erica Breitbarth is with us, music teacher and choir director at Ronald Reagan High in Milwaukee. Back to your calls now. Paul is with us in Chippewa Falls. Paul, hi.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. What's your instrument, Paul? What are you doing?
Well, the instrument that I play is the Native American flute and also Irish flute, pretty much any woodwind I've been able to pick up and play. I went and uploaded a video to YouTube under Paul Harvey Flute Guy, because, yes, my name is Paul Harvey.
And now tell us the rest of the story, Paul.
Indeed. Stand by for news. But I was able to just pick it up and play at a construction site. I'm an iron worker, and that video got millions of views online and kind of kickstarted where I play Native American style flute in unique places. So that's really easy instrument to pick up and play. I mean, I think if people are looking to get into an instrument, that's definitely something that is very intuitive, very emotive.
I love it. Paul, thanks a lot for sharing that story. And, you know, not a professional musician playing on his work site. I love it, Erica.
I love it. I also love finding a weird venue to play your instrument, especially if you want to get noticed on YouTube, finding a weird place to video so that you have your niche. That's really helpful if you're trying to go viral.
Pretty cool, Paul. Thanks a lot for sharing that story at 800-642-1234. Yeah, I was out walking before it got too cold. And one night, a couple months back, stumbled across this band that was playing on a underpass by a river going under a main street with this echoey tunnel, and they were doing weird electronic music. It was just one of the weirdest, randomest scenes. Can you talk about the value, Erica, of just getting out there and performing, you know, not necessarily on a stage?
Yeah, I mean, all these people who are in bands, I mean, not if they're taking all the safety precautions, they can't play together inside. So people are finding outdoor spaces in which to play. I have a couple students in a jazz band that play right outside someone's garage and rock out. So cool way to find some neat acoustical spaces and do the best of what you can, but while also following those safety precautions.
Thanks again for that call. Erica, you touched on this briefly, but I want to dig into it a little more. Can you talk about how your students' attitude toward music has maybe been different, or maybe not, I don't know, during the pandemic, the value it has to them in this weird time?
Yeah, I mean, I think they definitely miss that idea of making music together. I think we all do. I think we'll all appreciate that moment when we get to make music together in the same room. We'll have even more gratitude towards that when we get back in person. But I think it's also been a great tool for reflection, a great way to process some of the things that are going on in our world. And it's been great to have opportunities for students to share that music with others, to share that music with the wider community using technology. It's also been a great opportunity to learn more about music technology, about how to record yourself, about how to collaborate digitally. Those are all skills that we're not really forced to do when we're in person. And students have really learned a lot about the recording process and some of those music industry skills that we would not have learned if we were just doing our traditional band, choir, and orchestra.
Let's go back to your calls now. Vivian is with us in Madison. Vivian, hi.
Hi. I just wanted to tell you I moved to Verona last summer, and I had joined a band in the Quad Cities, Iowa, Illinois, and I hadn't played my trumpet for 50 years since high school. And I was taught for 25 years, had a large family, and now I'm back playing my trumpet, and it's just lots of fun. And the New Horizons band is very, very welcoming. And you can Google it. You can do New Horizons Band, Madison, and that'll get you to the website. So good luck with your playing. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Thanks for sharing that. Definitely. And I believe Tom Clark, longtime WPR host, played with New Horizons. I'll have to fact check that. Erica, a minute or so left. Talk about what Vivian did and pulling out that old high school instrument. I love it.
I love it. And I love that as a high school music teacher, I love that even if you put those instruments away, that your muscle memory, you still remember how to play. There's still that desire to get your instrument out or use your voice. And it's so often we're so critical of ourselves, and you got to start somewhere. Get it out. Find some people to play with, get inspired, and bust those instruments out. It's such a great way to relieve stress and to process all the things that are going on right now.
It's a great place to leave it. Erica, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Erica Breitbarth is a music teacher and choir director at Ronald Reagan High School in Milwaukee. We talked to her about the rise in people learning to play musical instruments during the pandemic. You can still share your story, by the way. You can head over to the Ideas Network Facebook page. Let us know if you've picked up an instrument for the first time or the first time in a long time. Let us know how it's going. If you're brave, maybe even share a little recording with us on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Love to see it there. You can also tweet us at Central Time WPR with your musical story. Weekdays from 6 to 9 a.m., it's the morning show with Kate Archer Kent. Tomorrow at 8, winter is a great time to bake and to have some fun doing it. Kate talks to the author of the new baking cookbook called Spread Love and Buttercream. That's tomorrow at 8 on the morning show. Up next, it's news from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio. Then Wausau is looking at a pilot project to create a guaranteed income for some residents. The mayor joins us, and we'll hear from a researcher about the potential and maybe some downsides of the idea. I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network.